And welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Welcome to the siblings episode, where we get down and dirty with all of the crisscross applesauce sibling relationships of Rosewood, PA.
Yes, this is like a big family tree episode, which, you know, most of the origins of that tree start with Peter Hastings and his wandering penis.
It's true, leading to what Hannah calls the, you know, the liars all being kind of tied together like a big bowl of linguine.
They are exactly a big bowl of linguine. Go ahead. Yeah, where should we start?
Well, I would like to talk about, like, there are a lot of different sibling relationships on the show, but
yes.
I would like to talk and just kind of ask you, like, which ones do you, if you had to name, like, maybe like the three or four that you find the most interesting, which ones would you highlight?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, Spencer and Melissa, for sure. I think that one might have to be at the top of the list, because I would say that of all of the sibling relationships on the show, that one is the one that's probably like the most consistent as a through line throughout the series. And I would say, like, inform Spencer as a character more than any of the other sibling relationships. And I think that Arya, for example, like, we talk about how Mike just will, like, disappear for huge chunks, and Melissa will disappear too, but I don't feel like Arya is always written as Mike's sister. I think that Spencer is always written as Melissa's sister.
Oh, a fascinating point.
Yeah. So I would say, Spencer and Melissa for sure. I would say Arya and Mike, because I do think that, there is a lot in there about Arya as the third parent in this family. And obviously we will talk more about that tonight. And then for a third one, even though I know that they are, like, technically not siblings by the end of the series, I'm going to say Allison and Charlotte, because I think that they are really written like siblings in a lot of ways. And as we were kind of talking about last week, the whole sort of Mobius strip of their relationship, the way that they reflect one another, I think is just a really, really fascinating element of the show.
I am going to hold up my notes to the camera. I wrote down Mobius strip of identity under Allie Charlotte.
So love that.
That's hilarious. I agree with the ones that you said. In terms of the relationships that I find the most interesting, I agree that, like, Arya and Mike, their sibling relationship feels the most lived in to me. But in terms of, like, the most interesting ones, I do agree Allie Charlotte. I do agree Spencer Melissa. And I would actually also say Spencer Jason is one of the ones that I really... I think it's written in a really interesting way. I think that is one of the things, like, the show kind of, like, pulls so many levers for trap doors, like, over the run of all the wild things that happen on PLL. And a lot of them wind up just, like, they just almost exist in a vacuum. Like, they always carry the threat of consequences, but maybe have no actual consequences. You know, season 5, New York being, like, a key example, or, you know, somebody's murdered and everybody's going to go to jail, but then nobody goes to jail. Like, you know, there are so many things like that. But the revelation of Jason as Spencer's brother is actually a lever that they pull that continues to kind of, like, you know, have reverb throughout throughout the series. And I think that that's really interesting to me.
I agree. And one of the things that I was thinking about specifically with Spencer's sibling relationships, because obviously Spencer is in the unique position of having, like, the most siblings for any character.
Right. She starts out with one and ends up with, like, you know, a baker's dozen practically.
She just keeps collecting them. But, you know, thinking about her different sibling relationships, it's like, I love thinking about Spencer sort of in comparison to her siblings, because it's like, in comparison to Melissa, Spencer is always sort of the messy one. You know, it's like Melissa's the perfect put together older sister. Spencer is the one who has to like plagiarize Melissa's paper to get that like golden orchid or whatever that award is. Versus like Alex Drake, Spencer is the stable one, right? Alex is the mess and Spencer's the stable one. And then when you look at Jason, Jason is so much the cautionary tale. Jason is like who Spencer could become. And the series so often pits that as like, oh, this is the worst thing that could happen, because like the becoming Jason is like this rabbit hole that Spencer could fall down. And I actually think that as the series goes on, Spencer begins to recognize that like Jason is not at all the worst thing that she could become. The worst thing she could become would actually be more of a Melissa, because that would be like an even less authentic version of herself.
Yeah, I think that that is a really important distinction. And I like thinking of Spencer as a character who exists in tension between the Melissa path that her parents had really carved out for her and the Jason path of like, everyone is just going to think you're the worst fuck up in the world, and that's going to be your narrative. So yeah, I think that both of those are very interesting for her.
Well, and I also think, you know, we've talked a lot about the whole PLL biology is destiny thing and how ultimately sort of boring that is as a storytelling device, because it's like, so your characters just have absolutely no autonomy. They're going to fall into whatever patterns were preordained for them from birth. But I think an interesting, like, I think the Jason-Spencer relationship is a really fascinating place to sort of see a version of that play out that does feel a little bit more, like, nuanced and choice-driven for the characters.
Well, and Jason, I feel like Jason's character, who, like, throughout the series, like, we see him really, like, struggle with addiction.
Yeah.
And work to like, you know, build a different life for himself. I think that Jason's battles with addiction throw the character of Spencer and the character of Peter into sharper relief. Like the unspoken, but like still very, and not even unspoken, like Spencer definitely, like they want to put her in rehab. They hire sober coach Dean. Like they don't handle her addiction very well, but like, it is something that she, you know, canon that she battles with. So I think that it throws like her struggles and then like the kind of undiscussed addictions of Peter Hastings into a different light.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. And so maybe we can kind of talk a little bit more broadly about like how we've talked about this with Spencer. How do you sort of see the sibling relationships kind of informing the respective liar and then vice versa?
Well, that is really interesting. I think that when you think of how it informs the liar, I think that like it's interesting to think about Aria and Mike in this context, yeah. Because like the parentification of Aria is so strong. Like Aria almost doesn't see Mike as a sibling so much as she sees him as like her teenage son who she's helping to raise. And so I think that like it really like Aria is the only liar who's the older sibling. Like all the other main character liars are kind of like the little sister of like, you know, the older generation that had all their secrets and all their stuff that was going on. So Aria is like the only older sibling. And I just think that, like, the relationship that she has with Mike really, like, just reinforces all of the ways in which Ella and Byron have failed both of them.
Yeah.
So I think that that really kind of informs Arya's character. One of the things that I think is interesting about Allison and her siblings and Spencer and her siblings, so Allie and Spencer share Jason, like they are both Jason's sisters. And I feel like it's really interesting to think about the way that Spencer, she didn't grow up knowing Jason was her brother. Like she discovers that when Jason is a grown adult, when Spencer herself is like in high school. And also Jason is already in recovery at this point. Like he's, you know, he's counseling people and stuff. So Spencer's relationship with Jason is really different than Allison's relationship with Jason. Allison grew up with an addict. Like she grew up with like Jason never being emotionally present for her. Like he's kind of a sinister presence, like in the flashbacks that, that Allison has and stuff like that. Whereas from Spencer's perspective, like he's a good guy trying to make things right with the world in general.
Sure.
And I think that that's really interesting to see like the way that his character is really differently perceived from each of their perspectives. And they both have like a really different relationship as his sisters with him.
That's a very good point. And it's interesting too, thinking about, you know, when we talk about addiction, I think there's a strong argument to be made that Jessica also has.
Oh, God, yes.
For sure. And Mary Drake for that matter. When we were talking about Aria and Mike and Allison and Jason, I was finding myself thinking like they're sort of both situations where, and obviously some of this is like the literal main character syndrome of the fact that Aria and Allison are main characters, but like in both of these families, there's sort of the daughter who's kind of like the nucleus of all this drama and all this sort of controversy within the family. And there's like so much attention being paid to her and her various activities and who she may or may not be sleeping with and like all of that. And then there's sort of this son who's sort of almost on the periphery, getting into trouble sometimes, but like just not getting that same level of parental attention and support. You know, there's almost a sense in both families that like Mike and Jason are like the spare siblings, you know?
I agree with them being kind of the spare siblings. And I would also say the thing that, you know, like we see Jason have compassion for Mike when Mike is breaking into people's garages. Jason catches him and like doesn't call the police. He kind of takes him, you know, back over to the Montgomery house. And I think that the thing that they really have in common is that there are ways in which their respective fathers, well, Kenneth, as Jason's, you know, presumed father at that time, they don't really hide very well the fact that, like, their love is conditional. Like, there are, or not present, like, in the case of Kenneth. Like, there are things about this son that they actively despise or would like to work against. In the case of Jason, obviously, Kenneth, like, just kind of thinks of him as a fuck-up because he sort of knows that he's not his real son. And then in the case of Byron, like, he has no patience and no sympathy for Mike's mental health struggles and sees it, appears to see it as, like, a character failing or a moral weakness.
Yeah. Well, and it's sort of implied that Mike shares some similarities with Byron's brother, presumably played by Rob Lowe, who's, you know, that also has similar struggles. Well, and also in both cases, mothers who just are sort of incapable of standing up to these fathers and sort of providing what the kids need in terms of like compassion and support and advocacy.
Yeah. Agree.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I think that, you know, and obviously this is like a drum that we've beat a lot of times, but like, I wish that Mike got more to do throughout the course of the series. I wish that Jason got more to do throughout the course of the series. As always, there's sort of this interesting PLL thing of like, they loved creating complex female characters. And I think what's funny is like a lot of times the male characters, if they were not a love interest, they just didn't, there just wasn't a lot of interest in developing them a lot. So, I think that's an interesting thing. You know, then of course we have Charlotte as this sort of metaphorical sibling and in some cases literal sibling. I mean, Charlotte and Spencer are revealed to be siblings by the end of the series, even though I don't feel like the show ever really like acknowledges that in a weird way. It's like Spencer can only be Alex Drake's sibling, I guess. But that, like, what do you make of the fact that Spencer and Charlotte are actually siblings?
I think that it's interesting. I think that there are some similarities between them. We see how, like, we kind of see Spencer's addictive personality throughout the series, and we see how much trouble she has when the game isn't in play. Like, yes, we see how Spencer really, like, grows very attached to the mystery. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is something that she has in common with Charlotte's character. Like, Charlotte also has a lot of trouble letting the game go. So I think that's a point of connection between them. And I kind of, you know, even though the show doesn't really do much with it, I feel like Spencer growing up and always feeling like a little bit inferior, a little bit out of place, that has a lot of similarities, although Charlotte is obviously like a much more extreme example of that. You know, so they kind of both have these like secret and, you know, like made out to be shameful origins. They both, you know, like Spencer is born in Radley and Charlotte is imprisoned in Radley for like her formative years and everything. Spencer winds up back in Radley as a teenager. So they kind of have this like, you know, mad women point of connection. Sure. And they also, you know, I just feel like there's a lot of queerness in both of their stories. So I like all of that as points of connection. When we think about like favorite, like, you know, kind of like favorite moments of Charlotte and Spencer on the show, we don't get a ton of them, but I do love like when they're at the party in the con game.
Yes.
When Charlotte has like sort of like like bullied Spencer into letting her do this favor of like, we're gonna go to this party and I'm gonna find this guy who works for UPenn admissions, and it seems like so outlandish, but like, you know, they go and everything happens. And I also like when she again kind of like does some friendly bullying of Spencer to help with, what is it, the mannequin hand? Is it like a trunk show or a
trunk show? Yes. Yeah.
Diva dish. So I do, you know, I do enjoy the times that we do kind of get them together. And I feel like when that's happening, like Charlotte does kind of use Spencer as her main point of contact with the liars. Like Charlotte, yeah, definitely, you know, she has the whole thing with Emily. She calls her Americano. She, you know, dials Jenna and threatens her on Emily's phone and everything. But like, really, I feel like Charlotte sees Spencer as the leader and kind of treats her as such.
Well, and I think Charlotte wisely knows that, like, if you win over Spencer, you've got the rest of the liars, right? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of power that Spencer has. Yeah, I think that the idea that Spencer is related to multiple A's is really fascinating to me. And I actually, like, I mean, the thousands of ways that I would rewrite the whole Alex Drake story. Like, in my mind, it's kind of like, you don't need to make it so literal. You don't need to have it literally be that Spencer has an identical twin who's A. Dig into the A sibling that Spencer already has in Charlotte. And, like, that's where there's, like, some interesting stuff to be mined, because Spencer already has a pre-existing relationship with Charlotte. And I think that, like, to me, there's something really fascinating about, because I think Spencer is a bit of a snob. We could say that for sure. And there's something kind of fascinating to me about, like, Charlotte being the kind of girl that Spencer might not think very highly of on the surface, and actually Charlotte being this, like, brilliant mastermind who's been 10 steps ahead of Spencer the entire time.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I love that idea.
And I also like the idea specifically in the Trunk Show episode, a.k.a. Single Fright Female, a.k.a. the episode that I weirdly reference all the time. But I really do think that that is, like, such an interesting episode in terms of Spencer and her relationship with her own queerness. And I love the idea that Charlotte sees something in Spencer that is connected to Paige and is like, oh, I have to sic Spencer on Paige, and that like Charlotte is the only witness to that story that she tells about the letter and, you know, and Allison tricking Paige and all of that. And so it's like, we have that flashback, but it's like Charlotte's version of that flashback. So we don't really know what happened. And I think there's a really fascinating murkiness that Charlotte provides, especially when you are reflecting on that specific time period of the show, when we just all knew her as like Cece at the Diva Dish, right?
Right.
And she's actually, you know, obviously puppeteering everything very closely. So, yeah, I think that the Charlotte Charlotte Spencer relationship is fascinating, and it had the potential to be even richer.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. We've kind of been talking about the different Spencer sibling relationships. Let's just dig into Spencer and Melissa. Like,
yeah,
if you were gonna give like your capsule description of that sibling relationship, like what are the words that you would use for it?
Oh man, obviously it's a very competitive relationship. I think it's really based on the idea that there is a scarcity of love in the Hastings home, and Veronica and Peter, whether intentional or not, it's like they raised these two starving dogs and then threw them in a pen together and like dangled their love over the pen. And it's like this constant fight to the death between these two siblings. To me, the episode, like, but I think an element of their relationship that I love is the idea that basically for the whole first five seasons, Melissa believes that she covered up a murder for Spencer. And I love that because it's like the whole series, Melissa has just been like this bitchy older sister, and she's sort of the thorn in Spencer's side, and she's coming in and stealing Arya's yogurt and being creepy and, you know, all this stuff. But it's like, there is this fierce love between them. And to me, the episode that is like the most kind of emblematic in some ways of their relationship, even though I don't think it's a great episode, is the one where Melissa makes that video of herself confessing that Spencer watches. And then like we watch Spencer watch it a bunch of times. It's the construction of that is a little lazy, but I love that as I love the idea that Melissa ultimately does confess this to Spencer, because like so much of Melissa's power has been in her secrets, and the idea of her kind of tearing down that wall is really a powerful one, I think. And really, like, I think that Spencer deep down like has always wanted to connect to Melissa and wanted them to be able to be real with each other and be allied in this family, but their parents have sort of made that next to impossible in so many ways by constantly pitting them against one another and making the love so entirely conditional.
Yeah, I love that shot in that episode where Spencer is watching on the computer screen and Melissa is confessing. And as it's shot, you can see Spencer's reflection in the computer screen that Melissa's image is on. I really love the camera work in that scene. I think it's really nice. But yeah, I think that the thing is that, like, they're so competitive. The Hastings kind of motto seems to sort of just be like, in terms of raising children, like, you know, how much do you feed a horse before a race? Just enough so it knows that it's hungry. Like, they want to keep them hungry. They want to keep them sharp. They want to like have them be in this like Olympics of achievement, where, you know, the parents are going to love best the person who has like the most impressive like star game story. So yeah. But there's this competition, but there's also this element of protectiveness. Like, again, not a fantastic episode, but when they find the mask of Melissa's face at the creepy man who makes masks in the woods, the one that doesn't even look especially like Melissa, not a great job on behalf of the props department, but the liars are automatically like, gasp, it's Melissa, oh my goodness. And And then you see that, like, Melissa is down at the dock and she's, like, trying to destroy all these masks. And she says to Spencer, like, I've been protecting you since it started. I've been protecting you since before it started. I love that. There is this, like, enormous want to protect Spencer. And that, like, part of that is, like, it leads to, like, the incredible secrecy that's kind of part and parcel of this relationship, that they can't ever tell each other what's going on. Like, when you've talked about this line a lot, when Melissa says, if you had to choose between someone you loved and me, what would you do? Like, she is drawing the circle of, like, people that Spencer loves, and she's excluding herself. Like, and it's like, but yet it has to be that way. Melissa can't be totally open with Spencer because she'd then have to tell Spencer that she knows that Spencer killed Allie. You know, like, it's this whole, it's just this whole, like, hamster wheel that they're on. But I love their relationship. I love everything about it, the competition, the cattiness. I don't love the, like, competing for boyfriends, because Melissa's, why is Melissa always bringing home these total fucking creeps? Well, because she doesn't actually like men. But one of my favorite periods for them is actually when Spencer goes to London, and you kind of get this, like, you know, this ceasefire almost, where, like, Spencer and Melissa are sort of, like, discovering, like, you know, who could they be to each other outside of, like, the orbit of their parents? Like, you know, what could they offer to each other, like, in a world where they both get to be adults? Would Spencer like to stay there? You know, like, what kind of a, you know, what kind of a life could, like, she and Melissa build as, like, two Hastings on their own? And then, of course, it turns out that, like, Melissa was conspiring with their mom. She's trying to, again, keep Spencer from going back to Rosewood to be arrested. But I love the time when they're in London, and it seems like maybe they're actually having, like, a genuine connection between the two of them.
Yeah, I do too. There's really, it's funny when you were talking about that, I was thinking, like, there's really a real, like, Greek tragedy element to their relationship, because there will be these little breakthroughs, these little moments of connection, or where they'll be on the same page, or where it seems like they're allied in some way. And yet there's always the sense of, like, it's going to break. Like, something's going to happen. Some other penny is going to drop here, and the fracture is going to come again. It's like, it's the story always ends the same way, in a sense. And what I would love for them in the future is that they would be able to make a genuine breakthrough in their relationship. I mean, I don't think they're ever going to be, you know, best friend sisters, but, like, I think that the two of them coming to a place of, like, yes, our parents were very fucked up in the way that they continued to pit us against one another, and we don't have to continue that pattern into adulthood. We can sort of forge our own path. I do think, like, I don't love the whole them, you know, the Melissa saying that Spencer shops out of other people's carts. Like, I don't love all of that. And yet I do think it fits in really well with the idea of two sisters who have been constantly fighting over the love of their parents. Like, what's going to be kind of the surrogate version of that for them to fight over the love and attention of a man that neither one of them really is all that interested in, but it's this idea that, like, it's the ultimate sibling rivalry, right? It's like, you want, that's your toy, but I want it, so I'm going to take it, you know? And it's, again, it goes back to, like, the love scarcity thing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that a much better, when we talked about, like, you know, the Tobey arc in, it's season four, right? When we have the whole thing about his mom and he's stealing the RV and he's making Spencer keep secrets from the other liars. Wouldn't a better version of that have been Melissa kills someone and needs Spencer's help keeping it a secret? Like, I think it's all well and good that PLL ended when it did, but, like, a later season where Melissa has done a crime and needs Spencer's help covering it up, I would love to see that. I think that there would be, like, a lot of really rich opportunities for storytelling there, for sure.
especially if the person she killed was some guy that they'd both been involved with.
If it was Rollins, for example,
Rollins,
that would have been that would have been great. But yeah, Ren, you know, anything like that would have been great.
But as we know, he got turned into an Eternity Stone.
Yes. But I also I like the moment when Melissa is trying to talk to Spencer, and you kind of get it as like, oh, Melissa's, you know, she's just kind of like rubbing it in how happy she is, and Ian is so creepy. But like Melissa says, now that she's married, she's kind of trying to tell Spencer she feels like the pressure is off. Like now that she's like forming a family unit of her own, she's getting like some space and some distance from like the pressure of being a Hastings. And we know that that pressure eats at Spencer too. Like when Spencer is saying like, you know, I tried not to be Spencer Hastings, but nobody else showed up for the job. Like we get Melissa in that moment kind of saying like, being Melissa Hastings was fucking hard. It was a fucking job of work. And now I can like take a breath and figure out like what else I might want to be. And I think that that was like actually something that was like vital information that she was trying to convey to Spencer that Spencer just like was not able to like really hear at that moment.
I agree. And I also think it's interesting thinking about Melissa from the standpoint of like a Spencer without the liars, right?
Yeah.
Because Melissa, like, we don't know a ton about her friendships, but like, we have a pretty good sense that like, she does not have a support network like the liars, like, and that she really kind of sees the liars as like a weakness of Spencer's, that she's sort of allowed herself to be known so fully by this group of people who are not, you know, who are not the Hastings, who are not like sort of shouldn't be in Melissa's eyes within the inner circle. And it's often like Spencer's often being pulled between her friends and Melissa because they often think that Melissa's up to something and she's sort of trying to defend Melissa. And so that's an interesting thing. I also think it's interesting from the standpoint of like, we've talked obviously about how like Charlotte and Allison's relationship mirrors Melissa and Spencer's relationship. And how in, like, Charlotte also sort of wants to isolate Allison from the liars. But rather than Charlotte being competitive with Allison over their parents' love, Charlotte wants Allison's love. Like, and I think a lot of that is, like, because she was isolated from her because they didn't grow up under the same roof. And I think, like, that's another sibling relationship that like has reflections of Melissa and Spencer, but also some really key differences.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's 100%. Correct.
Yeah. And that like, there's both, I think from the perspective of the younger sibling, there's like a fear of becoming the older sibling and a yearning to be the older sibling.
Yeah. I think that that's totally true. And in Allison's case, I think it's more pure. Like Allison wants to model herself on Cece.
Sure.
You're right. It is very similar to the way that Spencer like wants to model herself on Melissa. But I think that Spencer wants to out Melissa, like when the series opens. Like there's that line where she's talking to Hannah and she's trying to explain why actually Melissa isn't smarter than Spencer. Like,
right.
You know, there's this whole like math formula about their IQ test and statistically insignificant. And like, you know, when they're at the mall and she's saying, you know, you want me to pull focus from Melissa, like Spencer's desire is to like be the number one daughter and to kind of displace Melissa. Whereas I don't think that Allison wants to like out Cece. She just wants to kind of become Cece. She wants to like make herself in Cece's image. And she kind of wants to like age herself up. Like she would like to be Cece now, not like in 4 years when she's like Cece, you know, or 8 years when she's Cece's age or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. She wants to fast forward a little further because she sees Cece as like this independent woman that she doesn't get to be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I also really love Spencer just as the little sister. Like, I think that that is so interesting just because like Spencer is the, in so many ways, the leader of the Liars. In a lot of ways, like, cast is like more mature, more intelligent, more sort of involved in adult matters. And the fact that she's actually like Melissa's kid sister, I think is like such a great element of her character.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that she's like, Melissa treats her that way, you know, like Melissa.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like they're a little bratty with each other, like especially when like Melissa is like ostentatiously dumping a bunch of bridal magazines in the trash while glowering at her, or like they're grumping at each other about food, like, you know, who can eat the least? Does Spencer want a breadstick? You know, like just they have like you know, they have like a real, their dynamic, like as well as Arya and Mike, their dynamic does feel like lived in, even if it doesn't, you know, even though it feels like a little more manufactured for story purposes sometimes.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So do you have anything else just like off the top of your head about Spencer and Melissa?
Not specifically about Spencer and Melissa. I have some stuff to say about some of the other sibling relationships, but I think I'm okay if we move on from the two of them.
Well, so do you want to go to, we talked a little bit about Spencer and Charlotte already. Do you want to go into Spencer and Jason?
Yeah, Spencer and Jason. I mean, we have talked a lot on this show about Spencer and Jason, because I think it's one of the sibling relationships that fascinates both of us. One of the things that I find, that I remember from like when Spencer finds out about Jason, there's almost a sense of relief that she seems to feel in knowing this. And I think some of it is just having a truth confirmed and having a secret revealed. But I also think there's a relief for Spencer in the fact of like, oh, Jason is not perfect Melissa. Jason is somebody who's a little rough around the edges, who like has sort of this role as like the fuck up. And the fact that I'm related to him means that almost gives me a little bit of permission to be those things too.
Well, and it makes her like, it's weird. It's like, she doesn't exist anymore on a continuum of Melissa is the best and Spencer is the worst. She right. now exists on a continuum of Melissa is the ideal, but at least I am not Jason. Like she, you know, the bottom of the continuum has dropped significantly once she's kind of like mentally added Jason into the calculus. So like it kind of automatically like gives Spencer, I think, a little more confidence in her own position, rightly or wrongly. But I think that that's kind of how it rattles around with her.
And I would say that Allison has sort of a similar relationship with Jason in terms of like, he's the sibling to be pitied. You know, he is not the one you want to emulate. He's the one you want to pity.
Well, see, this is another point where I feel like the relationship that Spencer has with Jason really diverges from the relationship that Allie has with Jason, because when you think about like the words that define like Spencer and Jason, you know, of course, addiction is a really common theme between them. We've talked about a lot. They both kind of have this black sheep element to them. But also Spencer, once she finds out that Jason is her brother, like Spencer goes to bat for Jason in a way that almost no one else on the show ever does. Like, she wants him to be acknowledged. She wants him to be like included in things.
Yeah.
And she does something that she really doesn't do to other members of her family, in that she will, like on more than one occasion, look to Jason as a source of support, like as a source of personal support to her. Nobody else ever looks to Jason for support, because no one else believes that Jason is capable of it. Allie certainly doesn't believe he's capable of it. Kenneth certainly doesn't believe he's capable of it, but Spencer does. And I think that like having someone who like believes in him like that, like it changes what Jason himself thinks he's capable of.
I agree. And Spencer like she sees that he has something of value to contribute in multiple circumstances. And that is simply, like you said, it's not what he is used to in other situations. I think what's interesting is that, like, Jason is sometimes quite avoidant towards Spencer. Like, sometimes he does not, he doesn't want to acknowledge that link between them, or certainly doesn't want to foster it. And I also think, like, the De Laurentiis and Hastings families, despite being so intertwined, are so often at war with one another. And I think that as, like, a child of both families, he feels really pulled in multiple directions.
I agree. Well, but also, he is not a character who's been given agency to choose. Like, he doesn't get to decide if he's going to be a Hastings or a De Laurentiis. Like, he's been shunted off onto this, I'm the fuck up De Laurentiis path. Like, the Hastings are not going to take him in. They're not really going to fully acknowledge him. Like, he's just stuck being a De Laurentiis. And I think, like, part of his avoidance of Spencer is kind of, like, a result of that. Like, he doesn't, it just creates more trouble in his life if she's always like, but you're a Hastings, because, like, that's going to create, like, more anger from Kenneth, and that's going to create, like, you know, more of him feeling like, well, I, you know, it's not like Spencer has a great family, but it's probably better than mine, you know, so.
You know what I always really wanted, like, for like, as just a storyline at some point? I always really wanted a thing where we got a little bit more of a window into Jason and Veronica's relationship.
I would have loved more of Jason and Peter.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I always just kind of wanted a scene of, like, Jason and Veronica kind of dealing with this complicated family that they sort of have together in this strange sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, Jason has the misfortune of having dated multiple sisters of his. Probably the less said about that, the better. I think the fact that PLL, not once, but, like, twice, and then possibly other times, like, kind of dipped into the incest well is, like, not great show. Not great. Although I do like the construction of, like, the older class of kids, the older class of siblings, you know? And Jason also was NAT.
Yeah, and so he has relationships with Ian and with Garrett and, with Eric Kahn, with all of these, you know, kind of ne'er-do-well guys.
Yeah, and that was another one where I'm like, I would have loved us to get, like, more context on Jason's role in NAT. I feel like they kind of, when they sort of retooled Jason's character, they were like, well, we sort of want to keep him around, so we'll kind of forget that NAT business a little bit.
Yeah. Well, also, as a point of commonality between him and Spencer, we have the aria of it all.
Yes.
You know, their respective, you know, feelings of intense friendship and more, for one, Ms. Aria Montgomery, I think, is a striking point of commonality between them. And Aria's somewhat reciprocal feelings for each of them.
Well, and Allison, I mean, to me, one of the most interesting moments in the show is when the liars find that garage of pictures of Aria, and they assume that Jason was the one who took them. Because it's like every two seasons we have to cycle through, like, oh, Jason might be A. And then it's like, no, Jason's A. But then they discover that Allison was actually the one who took the pictures. I love that as just this other sort of twisted element to the various friendships and maybe more ships.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. When you talk about, like, how we cycle through the idea that Jason might be A every few years, I really love, like, you know, in the kind of, like, Jason is back arc that we get, like, when Drew takes over the character and it's, you know, it's season two, he's back with his new head. He's hanging around Aria, and, like, Spencer, you know, speaking of the Arya of it all, like Spencer is super suspicious of Jason at that time. And she spends like all of this time and energy. She's like hiding in his bushes. She's like trying to sneak into his, you know, she's like super, super suspicious of Jason. She thinks that Jason is, you know, definitely up to no good. She's trying to like get Fitz to be the big damn hero to save Arya from this sketchy guy. And I feel like it's so fascinating to read that as like yet another way that Spencer is always accusing herself of murder. Like Jason yeah. is not guilty of anything other than being Spencer's brother, unbeknownst right. to her at that time.
Right. Yeah. I love that. I love that. I love Jason as sort of almost the physical manifestation of like Spencer's fears or her darker impulses or something like that, you know? And it actually makes me wonder if Jason had visited Spencer when she was in Radley, like how that might have impacted her.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fantastic question. I also think that like she and Jason, when you think about, I mean, we don't love to think about the post time jump period because it's a disaster, but it's where we are. But I think that Spencer and Jason, they both have kind of like, what do I want to, like, it's not exactly a cynicism, but it's like a, it's not like a pessimism, maybe like a nihilistic approach. Like they both kind of like, mm-hmm. they don't expect a lot of good things from the world, really. Like yeah. they've both, you know, like kind of like all of the things that have already happened to them. They don't like expect a lot of great things to come, but they still have like an undercoating of idealism. Like Spencer goes to work for like a political party and is like crusading to like try and make the world better. And Jason is like this globetrotting philanthropist who's trying to like build wells for people who don't have water. And it's very white savior, but like they are both like in their own way, like they don't expect a lot, but they're trying to like do what they can to like move the needle. Yeah. And I think that that is like something that is like a commonality between them, but we don't really see that drive in a lot of the other characters. So I think it's another like kind of point of commonality with them.
Yeah, that's a good point. There, Jason is a character who like consistently we see him kind of looking outside of himself, like with the volunteering he was doing at the school, or maybe it was his actual job. I was never really clear on that. and like the various times that, you know, he's helped out Mike or different things. Like, I think that Jason is somebody who sees sort of like has a perspective on his family and his community of like, this is very insular and like there is a lot more out here in the world. And I think that that's a big part of Spencer's journey as well. And that, you know, even though we don't know a ton about her time in DC, that there was a lot of sort of broadening of her horizons there, necessary broadening of her horizons.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Did you watch, I know you've been like a Buffy fan. Did you watch Angel, the series, the whole way through?
I didn't.
So there's an episode, it's either like the second to last episode or it's actually like the series finale. But like they know that their big, huge battle against the forces of evil is like coming. So it's sort right. of like their like last day on Earth sort of like episode where everybody is like, you know, kind of trying to like tie up their loose ends. And one of the characters goes to this, you know, like, you know, people are like confessing their love and they're, you know, doing all these things.
Sure.
And one of the characters just goes back to this like kind of, it was like a place that he's like been a lot of times. It's kind of like a center that helps like underprivileged children that we've seen him working with. And he goes there and he talks to a character who's like been in the series but is more of a minor character. And she's like unloading a truck that has like some furniture for the community center. And he's like, what if I told you that today was like the last day before the end of the world? What would you do? And she says, she just like looks at him and says like, I would unload this fucking truck. And he like nods and they unload the truck. And I feel like that that interaction reminds me of Spencer and Jason. Like, if you told any of the other liars, it's your last day on Earth. Like, Arya's gonna go, like, running off to, like, drink pina coladas on a beach somewhere, you know, and like, be, like, typing her book as the sun sets. Like, that's what Arya's gonna do. Like, Emily is gonna, like, grab some girl at the bar and, like, go, you know, just go at it. Like, I think, like, Spencer and Jason are the ones who'd be like, you know what, there's work to do, and we're gonna do the work.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's true, that there's a real sort of, like, you know, roll up your sleeves and dig in kind of quality to them both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have more that you want to say about Spencer and Jason?
I don't think I do. I think I was just going to say, like, my favorite moment, one of my favorite moments of them is the moment of the revelation when Spencer says to him, yeah, like, I think my dad is your dad too. And he's like sitting in a classroom and, like, his face is, like, half in shadow. Yeah.
Yes.
That's one of my all-time favorite Spencer Jason moments right there at the start.
And it's been, like, episodes at that point of, like, her, like, scurrying around, chasing Jason, chasing her mom, chasing her dad, like, trying to kind of, it's like the puzzle pieces are right in front of her and she's finally able to fit them together.
And Jason tells her the truth. Jason is the only one that tells her the truth about it.
Yeah.
Which, God bless him.
Oh, I know. I know. That is the thing about Jason. He is honest. He is an honest character. So I wrote down, like, some of the non-liar sibling relationships that maybe we can see if there's anything, like, any few words that we want to talk about. Of course, we are kind of in the thick of it now. We have Jessica and Mary.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the reason that that relationship is interesting, I'm going to give you one reason, and that reason is Andrea Parker. She's so good at playing both of those characters, despite the fact that, like, you know, obviously Mary is just, like, such a thinly written character in so many ways. But definitely kind of like Spencer, Melissa to the extreme in a sense.
I agree. I also think, like, we talked a little bit about Allie Charlotte, and I think that, like, Allie Charlotte and Mary Jessica are kind of, like, in some ways a similar story in that we have this element, like, why does Charlotte get sent away? Because allegedly she tries to drown Allison in a bathtub, but really because of who she is, because she's trans and Kenneth wants to get rid of her. I feel like, so there's this element that you see actually in a lot of anti-trans panic right now of, like, but think of the children, children, think of baby Allison, so vulnerable and impressionable. And I think that, like, the story, at least the story that we hear from Mary, which certainly, you know, take it with several large, you know, boxes of salt, where she says that, like, what happened was that, like, Jessica kills this baby and then blames it on Mary, and Mary gets sent away and no one believes her. So again, you have this, like, but the children, you know, but the innocent, you know, the sacrifice of the innocent. And so I feel like you have, like, echoes of that in, like, the inciting incident that caused, like, Mary to live this life outside the system, and that then causes Charlotte to kind of repeat that pattern.
Yeah, and there's definitely a thing too there of, like, it sort of reminds me of, like, in the when there's, like, a big press story and it's like whoever's story gets out there first kind of wins the press over. It's like, you know, Kenneth kind of got the story out to Allison about, like, who Charlotte was, obviously dead naming her all the while. And it you know, it's kind of like Jessica has maybe told some tales about Mary, and also just, like, there's just sort of stuff in the air about Mary by the time Mary shows up, you know, mysterious files and police reports and things. And then it's like Mary kind of takes control of the narrative and it's like, well, Jessica's dead. Like she can't really refute this. And so there's so much with Charlotte and Mary about like, are they getting to tell their own story? Who's telling their story? Who benefits from which version of the story? And like, how much are the liars just kind of going to go on faith here?
I wish we had gotten a Mary and Peter scene at some point, because that's like a whole history between the two of them. And like Jessica allegedly is killed because Mary subverts the plot that Jessica and Peter had launched to try and kill Mary. Jessica winds up dying as a result. Convoluted. But I know that this isn't like the Count of Monte Cristo or anything, but like, Mary Drake, you're just gonna let that go? Like, Peter Hastings tried to murder you with Jessica and Jessica's dead, so it's just all good now? Like, I really feel like that is a big loose end. I would have been really here for like, you know, if we got to like season like 9 or 10 after the season where Spencer helps Melissa cover up a murder, if we got to like a season where like Mary Drake was basically like holding Peter at gunpoint for most of the season, I think that there could have been some interesting, you know, if they were like Mr. and Mrs. Smithing each other all over Rosewood, I feel like that would have made for some entertaining television.
Mary Drake and Veronica, like,
oh, teaming up
for, yeah, and then they get together, mm-hmm, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah. right while Taylor's vigilante shit plays in the background. Yes, yes,
obviously, yes, yeah.
Yeah, someone told us white collar crimes to the FBI.
There you go. Well, he was doing lines, we know people. Also, a loose end on PLL heavens.
What are the odds, indeed?
Well, speaking of like sibling incest and trickery, Toby and Jenna.
Oh, what a good thing to bring up. It is so interesting that we have like the show. It goes to like Charlotte and Jason. And it goes to like Jason and Melissa, and then it does this Toby and Jenna situation. It's like a weird thing that the show keeps coming back to it. And also, I would, and Spencer and is it Emily? Yeah, they're at that college tour where Hannah is going to come and try to bury the gun with like a plastic cup, and Spencer is talking to that dude on the campus, and she's talking about how much she loves the Lannisters from Game of Thrones.
Like, yeah.
What a weird through line to be completely accidental, don't you think?
I do think. I mean, yeah, it's... So Toby and Jenna, that's from the books, right? But it was, like, the other way around.
Oh, man. Pop quiz. Yeah, it is. He was taking advantage of her in the books.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because we know so little about their family structure and their parents. We don't really have a sense of how long they've all been living in the same house together when the show starts. We don't really know how much they really ever experienced life as like children siblings, you know, and...
Well, yeah, because there's that whole messed up timeline of the first secret where it seems like, well, they're like older when Jenna comes to town, but we don't really know.
We don't really know. And we also don't really know like how long the parents have been together by the time Jenna comes into town. Like, then there's, of course, the like bizarre interpretive memory flashback. Toby would have been 4, but like he's actually 16. Like, it's so weird. So it's like... That's another case where I feel like probably it's best not to dig, because you're probably just going to get like more messed up stuff and like badly handled abuse stuff. But it is very bizarre that like that is really one of the only brother-sister relationships on the show. Like, there are so few brother-sister relationships on the show, and most of them are vaguely incestuous. Like the only non-incestuous ones are Arya, Mike, and like Jason Spencer, right?
Yeah, that is totally true. Well, when you look at like, so when you look at Toby and Jenna, I think it's actually, it's good that we're talking about this because I think that the Toby Jenna thing serves a similar function to the Charlotte Jason thing, where like once they decided to do it, it has this factor of like, ew, that goes along with it. And so it kind of, it's almost like they're painting Charlotte as sick in her longing for that connection. And like, I think that with Jenna and Toby, it's like, they wanted a shorthand for like, this character is like the embodiment of all that is evil. And so they kind of like, they kind of went for that.
That's a really good point, that it's sort of like, what is the grossest, weirdest thing you can give this character? And it's like incestuous desires. I also think, and I think we've talked about this before, I also think it sort of gives them this trump card to be like, anytime the liars are feeling too bad about blinding Jenna, it's like, well, she did sexually abuse her brother. So like, everybody calm down a little bit, you know, which like none of that is great, right? It's like trading disability for abuse as like, who's the worst person? Like, I don't love that so much.
No, total agreement.
There are also two sets of rather slimy brothers on this show, in the Cons and the Fitzgeralds.
Ooh, the Fitzgeralds. What a great duo we've got there. So which brothers do you think are sleazier? I'm going to give it to the Fitzgeralds.
Oh, Fitzgeralds for sure. Yeah.
I feel like Eric and Noel have in common, like, they're the party guys, they've got this cabin, they're, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, they're here like for a good time, not for a long time. Those Fitzgerald brothers are like, I feel like the Fitzgerald brothers are kind of like the Kushner brothers of the show.
I feel like there are so many NDAs that have been signed in and around the lives of the Fitzgerald brothers. Like, it's like, it's like more, you know, like the stack would like reach the ceiling kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, plus they're like, from a certain perspective, you could think like, are the Fitzgerald brothers another story? Like, are they the male version of the Hastings sisters? Like, they've grown up in this rich ass family that has like more money than morals, and they don't really know how to be people in the world. But I think that the difference there, maybe it's the permissiveness with which society treats, like, you know, the Ryan Lochtes of the world. Maybe it's the, you know, the boys will be boys mentality. But you just get the idea that, like, the way that rattles around inside Prezra and Wesley is just like, they're never going to have to face consequences, either of these men. Their money insulates them from it. So they can really just do whatever they want. The rules do not apply to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think like that scene when Arya comes to Prezra's apartment and Wes has been staying there, and just the place is just a wreck. It's like, it's so indicative of the fact that like, this is a child who has just been like given a budget to do whatever he wants with, and has absolutely no sense of like how his actions might possibly impact other people, you know, like, and we see that with Prezra all the time. Like, it's funny how it's like Prezra occasionally casts himself as like, oh, I changed my name, I left this world behind, it was for me, it was, you know, all of that. And it's like, no, you're exactly the same as this, and like, this is probably who you always were, some kid who like tried to pass yourself off as like above it all, but was benefiting from this every step of the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's definitely cosplaying, like, poor little rich boy, you know, living in, you know, a smaller apartment, you know, that's like the size of a servant's quarters at his mother's house, you know, like.
Exactly.
But he's into it. Like, he's doing it because that's what he's choosing. And he obviously knows that he still has all of that money and all of that power behind him. I mean, he hires that limo to take him and Arya to the gallery opening.
Oh, God. Yes. Yeah. And, like, everything in his apartment, too, is totally, like, designed to look like cheap and weathered and is actually like thousands and thousands of dollars. Like that typewriter of his is like thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. Martin, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, that's a great comparison. The sleazy brothers who are, you know, yeah, kind of roaming around the edges of the show.
We also have, in terms of step-sibling relationships, we also have Hannah and Kate, of course.
Yes, I have them on my list. I feel like they are the least well-developed. It's kind of a paint-by-the-numbers evil stepsister arc. Yes. But at least through it, we get the Bang Bang Dance.
We do get the Bang Bang Dance. I also was thinking about, like, how Hannah and Emily as, like, only children, like, first of all, I think what's interesting about that is that Hannah and Emily, like, that relationship feels very much like a sibling relationship to me. So it's sort of like they've become kind of de facto siblings to one another. But it's also interesting that, like, you could make the argument that they probably have the best relationship with at least one parent, mm-hmm. of the Liars. And I wonder if it's coincidence that there are not other siblings, or, like, whether that is part of it.
Well, it's also interesting because I feel like Hannah and Ashley have a relationship that's like, it's not quite like as, oh, you know, are we mother and daughter or are we sisters, as like, you know, maybe Gilmore Girls is. But sure. I think that she and Ashley do have, they do have that kind of strong bond of like the two of them against the world, which, you know, at times it feels very mother-daughter, at times it feels very sisterly. They're always trying to cover up for one another. I think that's an interesting point too.
Yeah, I agree. And that, yeah, like the way that Emily and Hannah like will live with each other and bicker like sister. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
Is that a gay thing? No, it's a brain thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, for sure.
100%. Well, you know, but you just kind of mentioned, like, and I think one of the things about Kate and Hannah is the difference in how Tom treats each of them. Like,
yeah.
Even though Kate isn't his biological daughter, like, he really kind of seems to, you know, oh, she's this perfect kid, and he's going to pay for her to go to college, and, you know, Hannah is kind of like his, you know, his rough draft. Like, he doesn't really need to, like, spend more time with her or do much of anything. He's just going to kind of, like, show up to throw his weight around when something goes wrong, like she wrecks a car or something like that. And I think that, like, that's an interesting point. But also thinking about the way that, like, the parents on the show treat their kids. Like, I would say that, like, the treatment of Mike is really different in the Montgomery family than the treatment of Arya.
Yeah, I agree. I also think with Hannah's dad, there is this sort of element of like, she's Ashley's daughter. And so to get back at Ashley, he's sort of going to get at her through Hannah, which is like such an awful way to treat your child and your marriage.
100%, but I think you're absolutely right, especially because Ashley is an adult, so she's able to, like, I mean, she doesn't always succeed, as we have seen, but, like, she attempts to draw emotional boundaries around, like, what he is allowed to have access to, but Hannah, like, really doesn't have that at the beginning with him.
Right, and Ashley doesn't want to be the bad guy and say, like, no, you can't have a relationship with your dad, so, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we see, like, kind of the differences in how they treat their, but there's also, like, so I think the Montgomerys treat Arya differently from how they treat Mike. And I think, of course, the De Laurentiis family treats Jason very different than how they treat Allison.
Yeah. Yeah. There is this element of, right. Yeah. The spare kid, the fuck up kid, the sort of the less important kid. And the one
that you're not treating, like in the Montgomery family, like Mike is not treated like an adult at all. Like Mike is generally like kind of, you know, they kind of tend to, they're like, somebody has to pick him up from practice. Someone has to like take him to practice. Like he can't even like walk to the school with his sports gear apparently.
Right. Right. Yeah. He is treated as like this child, and Jason is also sort of infantilized in certain ways as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, remember, like, Mike knows what Byron's face looks like right before he's going to hit somebody. Like, Byron and Mike, like,
yeah,
like, there is a deep disagreement between Aria and Mike over what kind of a dad and what kind of a human Byron Montgomery is. Like, whatever else you have to say about him, like, Mike understands that their dad is not a good person.
And I think that you could say that, like, Jason has a really different version and experience of Kenneth than Allison does, and a very different version of Peter than Spencer or Melissa do.
Well, Allison has successfully been able to manipulate her parents and play them against one another for, like, basically her whole life. Like, we see her do that with her mom, but, like, she was certainly capable of doing it with her dad as well. And if that means, like, setting herself off at Jason's expense, she's certainly willing to do it. Like, she's definitely willing to, like, join in with, like, the Kenneth vibe of, like, oh, Jason, what a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, when it benefits her. It's interesting because, like, there's, you know, an element of sibling relationships that you would hope gets to sort of exist is, like, that you have somebody to share in, you know, processing your childhood, sort of sharing in grief over the things that your parents may or may not have done, sharing in grief when your parents eventually pass, sharing in joy at certain moments. And yet I sort of feel like, as I was reflecting on a lot of these relationships, I was like, do the sibling relationships only exist in PLL to cause pain?
What an interesting question. I don't think that is 100% true. I think that Aria and Mike are capable of being supportive with one another. Remember when she's eventually like somebody that he does kind of confide in about Mona when he's like, after Aria spends that entire episode climbing a tree to find the gummy bears or whatever that he's like leaving out there. So like they have something that's like capable of being supportive. I think that Spencer and Jason have like a relationship that's capable of being supportive. And I think that like, although obviously it winds up in a different place than it started, I do think that like, you know, like for example, when Allie has the pregnancy scare, she goes to Cece. So I think that there are definitely times when like the sibling relationship provides support in a way that like these parents who are letting their children raise themselves or let them be raised by wolves, you know, it's not always there.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said before, like, I do hope that Melissa and Spencer can find some unity in their relationship.
That's a great question. Like, which siblings do you think would be close as adults? Which ones would go no contact with each other and or with their parents?
I feel like Mike already basically is no contact by the end of the series. Like, he wasn't at their wedding. Like, he's like, nope. I could see Spencer and Jason becoming fairly close. I also think we see a closer version of Jason and Allison.
I think that Allie and Jason have a really different relationship because Allie, like, really kind of calls him out on not being physically present for her. And I mean, he wasn't emotionally present when she was growing up, and now he's like physically absent as well. But I do think that he and Spencer would have a closer relationship as adults, especially like, you know, if Spencer kind of comes to deal with her addiction, I feel like he could be sort of an important person for her. And I do think he's trying. Like, he and Allison are definitely no contact with Kenneth. So I think that, you know, there is potential for them to like try and form some type of relationship with each other.
I think that in order for the two of them to have a healthy relationship with one another, they pretty much have to cut Kenneth out of the equation.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you think?
I agree. I think that if Mike stays in contact with Arya, like Arya is going to be always pressuring him to make up with their parents. And he's going to be like, boy, it was nice catching up with you. I have to go and, you know, clean the inside of my microwave.
Like, I have to do anything else.
Yeah, I cannot have this conversation with you for the 100th time. So yeah, I think that that's probably true and fair. Let's see. So I think I would hope that like Melissa and Spencer would like, you know, have some closeness. Oh, do you think, like, what do you think after the end of the show, the point at which the show like closes the curtain? What do you think Spencer's relationship with Peter and Veronica would look like? I mean, I know that, like, the Hastings, like, I know this is, like, sort of just, like, how they are, but, like, could you really ever forgive your parents for not telling you everything that they ever told her?
Yeah, that would be a hard pill to swallow and just say, like, oh, everything's fine. You know, I think that my hope is that we sort of see in the last season like a softer version of Veronica a little bit. And so my hope is that she and Spencer would get to a place where it's probably too much to hope that they would be in therapy together, but like be able to talk a little bit more openly about certain things. I think that Spencer would probably be very angry with her father, rightfully so. And I can imagine their relationship being like it being a thing where every time Spencer came home to visit her parents, it's like, oh, Dad's at Hilton Head for the weekend. That's fine. I'm not asking any questions, you know?
Right. In fact, he's buried in the backyard, just like everyone.
Exactly. I think that there would be a lot of distance between Peter and Spencer. What I always wanted to know is, like, we never get to see Melissa's reaction to finding out all the stuff about Spencer's parentage. And I always wanted that. How do you think that information would impact their relationship?
Oh, man. Well, I think that Melissa must have known, right? Like, Melissa was old enough.
I mean, yeah, but they could have.
Like, we talked about this before. The pregnancy pillow was Veronica's originally.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, like, Melissa is fiercely loyal to Spencer, full stop. To the point of which I think if Spencer decided, like, I actually need to, like, not talk to mom and dad right now, I think that she could go and stay with Melissa. And Melissa would be like, okay, I'm fine with that boundary. We will like, not talk to them for as long as you need. Like, I do think that she's very loyal to Spencer. I don't know. It's an open question. Like, how much does Melissa know? How much does Melissa understand? How much does Melissa remember? We don't know. But the thing that I think that Melissa would find difficult to forgive is that, like, the choices that Peter and Veronica made, even though, like, for whatever reason, they put Spencer in danger. They put Spencer and Melissa in danger. And I think that that is something that Melissa would have a lot of trouble dealing with.
Yeah, I think so too. I think also Melissa would just not not being in on the secret.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
You know? I think she'd have a really hard time with that. Yeah. Gosh, the Hastings family and babies and pregnancy. That's a complicated little riddle.
Now, Vina, I have noticed there is one sibling relationship that is like the elephant in the room. We've talked, you brought up Wesley Fitzgerald before you brought up one of the most explosive sibling reveals of the show. Were we pretending it doesn't exist?
Would you be referring to Spencer Alex Drake? Govna?
You know I have Govna in my notes. Yes, I am referring to Spencer and Alex Drake. Obviously, this is not a relationship that the writers put a great deal / any thought or care into creating at all. But I do think that there could be something to the idea, if you're gonna give Spencer a twin, I do think there's something that could be interesting about it in the idea of Spencer Drake being like this cracked mirror version, like being the version of Spencer that does become A. That's the version of Spencer that is like, if Spencer gave in to her dark urges, this is what it would look like. And it would also have a really bad British accent.
Well, let me ask, would we like this more if she wasn't British?
I mean, we would like it more if she wasn't ridiculous. We would like it more if it wasn't ludicrous.
That is fair.
If they did something to distinguish the two of them besides different sitting postures and an insane accent, yes, we would like it better. A Cockney accent, and not even a modern Cockney accent. Like Alex Drake is not just from London. She's from a Dickens novel. She time traveled and jumped out of David Copperfield in order to be there in Rosewood playing the game.
Eliza Doolittle would be maybe a little too much, Em. It is so much. I mean, obviously, we're not that far away from the Alex Drake reveal, so we'll have a lot to say when we get there. I think it's such an obvious way of trying to have your cake and eat it too, of we don't want Spencer to be A, but we sort of do want Spencer to be A. Also, we want Troyan to be the one to deliver the big villain monologue. Unfortunately, she's going to be delivering that big villain monologue in a Cockney accent. I think if Alex Drake was just American, I think I would be 50% more on board, quite honestly.
Yes, I do agree. Well, also, we have talked before about the whole Mary and Jessica thing, and if you've got a secret twin, the point at which your secret twin should come to town is when you're dead and buried under the rose bushes, and then your secret twin comes to town, takes over your life. That's what a secret twin does. If you're not a secret, you're not doing that as a secret twin, you get an F. You're wasting all of your potential here.
Agreed.
So similarly, with the Alex Drake reveal, I feel like Spencer Hastings, who has spent the whole series accusing herself of murder, we don't get to see her watching security footage where someone with her face is up to no good and she doesn't remember. Like, oh my gosh, what?
Yes.
What a travesty. What a travesty that we don't get to have that happen. That we don't get the liars thinking that Spencer might be A because they've like cited this person around town being up to no good. Like, what's going on with Spencer? Is she having blackouts? Is she taking pills again? Like,
yeah.
Oh my goodness. What this could have been versus what they did with it is just like, it's just like so slapdash. It's not even funny.
The fact that it's essentially like Jenna and Toby who figure it out. It's so ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah, I think personally, I think the less said about Alex Drake, the better. but because it's not even a sibling relationship. There's nothing about Spencer that it is revealing, which is shocking for an evil twin reveal about your main character.
Point of order. I think I disagree with you about that. I think that one thing that Alex Drake's character throws into some relief is Spencer's queerness. Which is generally subtextual in the show, does appear more prominent in Alex Drake. I mean, despite the fact that we're supposed to believe that she's in love with Toby, boy, she sure seems to have some feelings about some of Spencer's female companions.
Yes, yes. And she would probably call them female companions in a in a British accent, you know?
She would. She would. All these birds that Spencer's keeping around her. Yes.
God. Oh, isn't it? Apologies in advance to our listeners. When we get to that episode, it's just we're gonna be doing the whole episode in bad British accents.
I don't know what we're gonna do because that's like the last episode, so like it sort of requires some like gravitas, but then again
isn't it?
I mean, it's like the thing about it is that like we've spent so much time and so much energy on this show over the years, and so like there's always going to be a part of us that's like, well, how sad that it is coming to an end, how sad that it's over.
Yep.
But then it's also like, get this get this abomination off of my screen. This cannot be over with fast enough. Oh good lord.
We cannot be talking about eternity or infinity stones.
Yeah. So it'll be something. It'll be something when we get there. But thank you for indulging me.
Yeah.
And forcing ourselves to talk about the Alex Drake of it all. So Alex Drake, I mean, she ends the series imprisoned by Mona, and then like fairly quickly seems to escape. What do we think? Do we think that Spencer is just going to be like, do we think that Spencer is going to have to like be putting out Alex Drake traps wherever she goes the whole rest of her life?
I would like, for her sake, I would hope that she would not have to do that for her sake. But I think that like the show potentially implies that, because the idea, I mean, it's almost like it's like the prologue to the Alex Drake story is like the finale. And then it's like, we can envision that there's some, you know, globetrotting adventure of like Alex Drake stealing Spencer's identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on that note,
Is that a good place to wrap up our sibling conversation?
I think it is. I think that once we've talked about Alex Drake, there's not a lot more to be said.
We've officially scraped the bottom of the barrel. Yeah. Yeah.
In it.
Oh no, that's going to become a thing. Well, if you have thoughts on any of the PLL sibling relationships, if you have a favorite or like a dynamic that we, you know, you want to tell us more about, we would love to hear from you. You can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can also check out our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. And you can also leave us a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. I don't know that I'm going to make a full Spotify playlist for this episode, but a song recommendation that I will say is Superboy and the Invisible Girl from Next to Normal, because that is a really interesting song about the dynamic of a sibling relationship where one sibling is sort of getting all the attention and the other is kind of the forgotten one. And I was thinking about that as we were having our conversation tonight.
Oh, I have some Spotify suggestions for that playlist. Yeah, you should definitely make one. That would be so fun.
Okay, I definitely will. All right. Well, until next time.
Yeah, take care. It's getting to the holidays, so take care of yourself. Be kind to yourself. Do what you need to do to get through the next couple weeks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, if you need to, you can always take a moment, pause, and pray to Vander Jesus. She's always for us.
So true. Take care.